I think you should know that Lauren asked Lila to take this trip. We felt that our staff, especially the wives, needed the ministry and the fellowship that Lila could provide. And we felt that her ministry among the many nationals that we are working with throughout these countries in PAN would be greatly enriched and blessed through her ministry. And from all the reports that we've heard from the gang out there, God used Lila in just a fantastic way. So we're really looking forward to that. If you'd come.
A few years ago, perhaps 3 or 4, Lauren and I were having some time together, and we were talking about his beloved gang, of which I'm a part. And between us, we felt that we had some days of suffering ahead of us. There would be family, because our family, our NAV family, has grown so and is growing. There's bound to be some heartache with children and suffering as a result of that. And we are having our share, I think. There's other suffering with some of our families that we hear little or nothing about. And our fifth child was an invalid. And almost daily I pray for the courts, who spend 5 to 8 hours, 7 days a week, with their retarded child. They're with us. And now we have the male leaders. And I think I know a little bit of what they're facing. And you who are single, it may not hit you at all. I don't know. Depends on your age, I think, and what you faced in your young years. I was rather amused at Rod some time ago. We who've been around a while never heard him introduce these sweet young things like this. But you see, he's safe because he has a sweet young thing for a wife. And he's very safe and very, very honest in introducing you that way. I don't think I need to tell you that my heart is really heavy over some of you in this room who are suffering tonight. Some male leaders. I want to thank any of you and all of you. May I have to go up? I really do want to thank any and all of you who stood with me in prayer. On March the 14th, I left Colorado Springs. Do you realize that 6.5 months ago I stood here and shared with some of you some prayer requests and my purpose for going at Lauren's request? I mean, he asked me to share with you. I wasn't sick one split second, nor did I feel sick the whole trip. We have a glorious family, a wonderful gang on the field. Not any more special than you are, but who face things that perhaps you've never faced, or we have never faced. And some things I heard for the first time. I learned some things. My eyes were opened, and I learned some lessons, I think, that perhaps will stay with me until the Lord takes me home. And I'm ready to go. Are you? What a day. And then you sneak in some babies while I'm gone, and some weddings, and it's glorious. It gets gooder and gooder. And I'd like to make some statements at the beginning so that you no way can connect them with any name or names or any country. But one thing that I've talked to the Lord about as far as Lila is concerned, I'd like to say to you tonight. And I don't think we're ever too old to learn. But listen, beloved. Be sure that you get all that God has for you right here in this hallowed place. And I'm wondering tonight if we are the loser and not learning what we should be learning because we're all wrapped up in things or a thing. Or we're being troubled by a person or persons. And listen, God is too big for that. There isn't anything in your life that He can't take care of. And that He won't. And if you know that God is leading you to a given field, find out everything you can about that field. We have kids where I've been. Some, a few. If they had been told just a few things about the country and the culture, a little bit about the background, their story would be different tonight. We have a couple on the field. When they were called to the field and then knew from God that they were to go, they just said, well, we'll never have any adjustment to make whatsoever. So they arrived at their given field, and they were instructed by their leader, the man heading their country, and they didn't heed the warning or the advice. So they made some mistakes, and a few of them were costly. You see, we are to keep teachable, and one of the best definitions I know of humility is keeping teachable. And this is a young couple, and their work has suffered because of it. And we here, we have someone to go to who perhaps has walked down that path before us. We're having trouble with some scripture, we'll say. And but we can get help. But I wonder, beloved, tonight, if every one of us in this room who has a problem or problems, I wonder if we're being honest before God about them or about the problem in our life. Right here in quote and unquote Christian America. And if you please, Glen Eyrie, where you can get help for the asking. And if you don't get help, beloved, and you do not get to the bottom, the core of this problem or thing or things, it's going to be multiplied on the field. So many of the countries I've been in, you could slice the darkness almost, at least I thought you could, the satanic darkness. And yet, in some of these countries, it was so much better than it was in 1958 when I was out there last. And I asked Roy Robertson, how do you give a report to the gang of what that I've just finished? He says, well, when you find out, let me know. So that's all the help I received from Roy. So when Lauren asked to see me, why, I asked him. And he said, well, I think, Lila, if you just stay with people, that that's what the gang would be interested in, and so that's what I'm going to do tonight. Otherwise, we'd be here a week because of all I've been through. I left the 14th of March from here to Southern California and in due time went north. And the 27th of March, I flew from San Francisco to Hawaii. And the Greenaways and Judy Crawford and two young girl, new converts were there in at the airport. Well, when I arrived in Hawaii, Margie Gould had left the day before. And Margie Gould from Seattle to Hawaii, and she was at the airport when I flew in. Margie Gould was Dawson's first secretary. Margie Thompson, she was then, and she married Bill Gould, one of our men. And he died very suddenly with polio 22 years ago, leaving her with four children, and the baby was 6 weeks old. So can you possibly imagine what wonderful 4 days those were? They were golden. I took part of my time alone and decided to walk among the beachcombers of Waikiki. I am a grandmother nine times over, and I am vitally interested in nine children tonight. And I wanted really to see what they're going to face. And I was amazed. I really was. Even with what I've seen on television and what I have read and heard, I was still amazed at the sin that prevails, that is prevailing there. And Walt and June McHouston were absolutely marvelous to us and to me. And then Walt came in due time and took me to the airport as I left for New Zealand, and he put three leis around my neck. And I was off. And our plane, 45 minutes out, I left the first day of April, and 45 minutes out, it became the 2nd, April the 2nd. And our plane let down 6.5 hours later in Fiji Islands, and it was 88, and you could feel the heat coming up from the ground. And so I was reminded anew how to pray and what to pray for. I arrived at night, about 7:30 at night, in New Zealand, and Joe Simmons was there, and Eleanor, that's the Eric and Eleanor Wilson, and I had never met them, Eleanor and Eric, and then their youngest son was there that night, and Dave Bradford, and they were a sight for sore eyes. And as I flew over New Zealand, gang, one time I said, how many sheep are there in New Zealand? They said 60,000. And I said, well, I saw every one of them. I think I did. I love New Zealand. If I were asked to go and retire, live the rest of my life there, I wouldn't even have to pray about it. I love it. It's little country. But I loved it. Auckland is not Auckland, it's Oakland. And so I remember asking Alan Goulstone where he's from. He says, Oakland. I says, California? But Auckland is beautiful, and in part, it reminds me, in parts, it reminded me of San Francisco. And nobody in the wide world could be sweeter to you and more gracious to you than Eric and Eleanor Wilson. I loved every hour I had with them. I loved being in their home. And rather than tell you of meetings, I'll just mention in passing what they were. I arrived at 7:30 Friday night, and 1:45 the next day I started. And I mean, they kept me busy. And just before I left, they left New Zealand. They measured the bags under my eyes, which, well, Joyce knows me real well and has been with me through thick and thin and all through my tuberculosis. Days in bed, months in bed. And she, I don't think, has ever seen me with bags under my eyes. But they measured them and they were very long. But I decided that ministry must come first. That's why I was there. And so sightseeing, and I did no shopping at all until I got to Hong Kong. But I did no sightseeing, just going and coming in the car. But our gang is hungry and our gang is needy. And I do not see anything wrong. And now I may shock someone in this room tonight by saying this. But I do not see anything wrong with being lonely. Or homesick. What's wrong with that? You ever get lonely? You ever get homesick? And I don't mean just for heaven. I mean homesick. To see mother and dad or anyone else. And some of our gang are lonely. And one thing, if you aren't sensitive to the one next to you, put it on your prayer list and ask God to give you a sensitivity second to none so that you can detect by the eyes or lack of words or quietness, whatever it is, wondering if they have a need that you might be able to help. And we have not only girls, but we have some fellas that were in need. And they needed someone to just share their heart, their life with. We have, Rod, we have a tremendous gang. And while I was there, I heard you were coming in November, are you?
January.
I heard Lauren was coming in November and you in January. That's exactly how I heard it. And Lauren said that you would be going instead of him. I mean, Lauren isn't going, he told me, for a while. But I was in, it's awfully hard on fellas in different countries. Like, they heard that Leroy and Skip Gray and Jack Mayhall, they heard where they were going to be. And it was hard on two families. I mean, they really wanted to see these men and particularly one of them. One of those three. They're hungry. And New Zealand had, after I saw a few tears, I decided to ask why. And I found out that they had not had a let up for 2 months. And so I was just an addition. And I felt sorry for them. I really did. So I said, well, forget about me. And I'm one of the bunch. So whatever needs to be done, I'm going to help do it. You know? To lighten a load. But they had their best foot forward for 2 months and had to be fully dressed and in their right mind at all times. Joe Simmons is a go-getter. He's an outstanding man of God. It's never too early or too late or too heavy or too much for Joe with his beloved gang. And he's in charge of New Zealand and Australia. And he has eight staff on the staff in New Zealand and 7 in Australia. And I asked God before I left and as I was flying, that if it pleased him, not to let me miss one, not one of our beloved gang. And I only missed one the whole trip. That was Dick Potter in the Philippines. And I received a letter from telling me why he couldn't get back. But I didn't see everyone in their own country, but I saw them in other countries. And if you are not praying for our gang behind the wheel of their cars, put it on your prayer list. I've been in some countries now where I do not see how it's possible to drive without killing someone or something every day. I am not kidding you. A young doctor who was away from his country was afraid he wasn't going to see me before I left, so and he was in a given country. And so he wanted to hurry up and get everything done so he could get back to this country and see me before I left. And he hit a boy, a seven-year-old boy. He was in a borrowed car, one of our cars, and he hit a boy and killed him. One of our own men hit a cow. At the end of that cow, there was a chain on the cow, and the end of it was a boy, and it jerked. You see the child when he hit the animal and broke the child's arm. He killed the cow. It doesn't take but a few dollars to settle a life when it is killed on foreign soil. But you face lynching. You face beating. You face a lot of things in foreign soil that we don't think about here. And so if you aren't praying for the safety of our fellows and girls at the wheel, then I'd say start in. At 2 o'clock on the day after I arrived in Auckland, I had a tea at Sheena White's flat and with her girls. And really got to know them, I thought, in a real way. Sheena has charge of the girls' work in Auckland. And before I left, she was to have been sent to Australia. I have not heard that she arrived, but I've heard from Maureen Dawson since she left Christchurch and went to Sydney, Australia. But that was a precious time. And then that night they had a navigator rally at the chapel of the university in Auckland. And it was packed out. And God gave clarity and a wisdom, I believe. And it's all through his honor and his glory. I wasn't anywhere ever that I was but Hong Kong that I wasn't riddled to death with questions. I've had so many seminars and feminars that, and I'm very grateful that tapes weren't made of some of those question and answers. And when I get up into Korea, you'll understand why. But that was Saturday. I had the two meetings, and then Sunday morning, they had me in a pulpit on the North Shore, which reminds me of San Francisco and Auckland. On the Melford Baptist Church. Well, I have convictions about speaking in God's house on Sunday. And I shared it with Joe. And Joe said, it's too late. You'll just have to take your convictions and, you know. Reminded me of Dawson. Can you see me in a crow's nest? In church. Well, I was there. And then they brought me back to my hotel, which was quite a ways, and then came and got me later. And I'm going to throw this in because I think it might help you. It isn't against anyone, as you will see. Not a living soul. But as I flew into New Zealand, they served us two big meals on board, and I ate two meals. And I usually do not eat on a plane. But I ate two meals, and I was rather perplexed about it. I really was. Well, I arrived in New Zealand, gang, and 6 days later, I had my first full meal. You know why? In New Zealand, you don't eat when you want to eat. You eat when the restaurant's open, you see. And when the restaurants were open, well, I was getting ready for my next meeting. And couldn't stay and wait. And I remember when the Bradfords invited me to lunch, she had a green salad. And the reason that she told me later, the reason she had a green salad because she just knew that I had had so much to eat that I was tired of it. Now, in your hotels, you have a little refrigerator, and you have milk in it, and you have also in your refrigerator, and they put it daily fresh in there, the maid does, or the housekeeper. And then you have a coffee and tea maker. So, and I always had fruit. In almost every hotel I was in, I had fruit and flowers. And so I had fruit and tea for breakfast. But I came back from my Sunday morning meeting, and then they picked me up for a tea at the Eric at the Eric Wilson's home. And it was for the neighbors, for married women. And there was one neighbor that wasn't a Christian. She has since become a Christian, but she was in that meeting. And that was one of the teas where I was absolutely riddled, and so was Glenary, by questions, I mean. And only God can give you wisdom in certain circumstances. Well, in all circumstances. Then that evening I had with the Wilsons, and it was a highlight of my whole trip. They have four children, 13 to 19 years old, and their 19-year-old is a boy. They have three boys and one girl, and the girl was 18 when I was there. And I remember in Sheena White's tea, Sheena asked the girls to give me their names and where they were born and how old they were and what they're doing now and what's on their heart. When they got to this girl, she said, they asked her how long she'd been a Christian. She said she'd been something Christian for just a short while, and I didn't get what she said. And I said, I'm sorry, I didn't hear just what you said. Well, it came out that she hadn't been a proper Christian. You know, we say down to business here. And this was their daughter, the Wilson's daughter. I didn't know that at the time. But they have children who win souls for Christ. They have a boy who's 13 that was suffering terrifically in school from persecution, but standing his ground firmly. And if you aren't praying for our families, their children, put the children on your prayer list. You'd be amazed at how much they need your prayers. And for wisdom for parents. And you know, just going to the mission field doesn't make you an angel. Doesn't mean that you don't have a problem or problems or face them. It just multiplies them. That's what it does. And Satan is busy, and he's a trained strategist, and he doesn't give up till he must, but praise God, he must. Then I had some precious time, 4 hours, one day with the Bradfords, and you would be very thrilled at their setup. Their home is beautiful, and their yard, their garden, is it isn't a lawn, it's a garden, and it's just ideal for their more lively children. And Corrine has a heart, I think, second to none for the lost and women. She's faithful in her witnessing and faithful in her life, and is an eager beaver, and she's out to learn everything she can, and along with that, to learn how to rightly divide the word of truth. She's outstanding, I think. And she's in her formative years and the mother of four. And Dave is at the university, and perhaps you know that the university, the students do not live in. So you, it's very, very difficult in the universities of both Australia and New Zealand because of this, of not living in. And that's, I think, could be a very... very easy prayer request if the Spirit of God ever brings it to your mind to pray for these fellows out there who are in the university work. And there's some blaring disadvantages, I think. Then that night, I went back to the Bradford's home and met with their couples. And there was a couple there that was unsaved, and this couple had been meeting by their, I mean, they want to be with a Christian gang, and they make it known that they aren't saved. But I think if they didn't tell you, you wouldn't know. Their prayers sound just like yours, and they're as interested as you are in the Lord Jesus Christ and in his word, and their hunger. They're hungry, and there's a hunger, and there was with all these couples. And it was a glorious night for me. I enjoyed it very much. And then the next morning, Dave came and got me, picked me up at my hotel at 6:30 a.m. and took me to the airport. And I left then on my way to Christ Church. And it took all day because they had to stagger my travels because of Roger Anderson and James Fox. so that we wouldn't be at the same place at the same time, you see. And so I went to Palmerston North from Auckland and spent 5 glorious hours with Alan and Maureen Goulstone. And we went to the university where he his work is, and for God. And he's an outstanding fella. No grass grows anywhere near him. And as I think I'd put Eric in that same category along with Joe Simmons. Joe was untiring. He'd only been home 8 days this year when I left him. 8 days. And he was everywhere I was but his own hometown, Christchurch. He or Mari weren't there when I was there. And from Palmerston North, I went to Wellington for 30 minutes. And imagine how shocked and surprised I was when Joe and Mari were at the airport to meet me. And Roger Anderson and Jim and Selene Chu. And then I went from there to Christchurch, where Warren and Halvey Mason and their 2 children and Maureen Dawson met me at the airport and took me to my hotel. It was more like a motel. It was brand new. And then left me for the night, and I needed the rest, and then started the next morning. Warren had set up luncheon at my hotel for this Malaysian fella, a Malaysian couple had just arrived 3 weeks before I got there, who Bill Lee had led to Christ, led the fellow to Christ. And Roger Clyborne and this Malaysian fella and Warren Mason had lunch with me at my hotel. And they ate and I didn't, because they asked questions and I was answering, you know. But we had a glorious time. And then I was invited before the rally that night to the Warren Mason's home to just get acquainted with their gang. And they have a house full. And this was all question and answer type of meeting. And then we went to and had our rally. And this was a large rally also. And I found early that they were eager to know about, you know, that my, perhaps some of you don't, that my assignment was to Waldron and Lorne had felt, Waldron Scott and Lorne had felt that we are in an era where that for 5 or 6 years now that we have a new type of people, people who had never met Dawson or heard of him. And particularly the Nationals, they wanted that they get to know how this man was converted and then how God led him in his life and the steps leading up to the work that we're in today. And then they asked if I would take the history of the Navigators and share it from its inception to Dawson's homegoing, and then as the Lord led to share how God had cared for me. And so they were all ears, and you really could hear a pin drop. And I just want to praise God for this and to thank God for you who faithfully stood by. I felt prayed for. I really did. I had that prayed for feeling. And I received just loads of mail, lots of mail, encouraging me and also telling me and assuring me and reassuring me of that you were standing by. And I appreciate every letter that I received from anyone in this room who wrote me. And I thank you for it. Christ Church is beautiful, by the way. It's a beautiful city. The man who did my hair is a wonderful Christian gentleman who is a contact, he and his wife, of our gang there, and very dear and close friends of Joe and Mari's. And Joe and Mari's children have a daughter there, Pam, and her husband, who is Hamish. And their last name is Harrington. And they have a little girl, She was about 13 months old. And they are outstanding, by the way, and very much loved and very much used. And he's a medical doctor. And later I'll be telling you about the two daughters of Joe and Mari's. What time's breakfast, Ron? Okay. Would you order, maybe they ought to have a little dinner steak, you know. I've just started. Look, it's 10 minutes to 9, 5 minutes to 9. I had a very rich time at a woman's tea at Helvey's home, Helvey Mason's home. And this was the beginning for me of a very great enrichment to my life of meeting missionaries from all types of organizations and all types of missions. And it's what I'd asked God for this trip, and he granted it. I had several of these meetings, and I had many in several countries. And I loved every one of them. They were all different. And many of the missionaries I knew, and after I shared with the ladies at this tea, there was a lady that just was radiant as all get out. She was an older lady. And she came up to me and she said, you know, God met me in a real way at Dawson's Grave at Glen Eyrie. And I just, you know, about fell through the floor. And she told me about it. And another lady said to me, does England, Mrs. England, ring a bell with you? And I said, well, if you're the England whose home Dawson stayed in way in the interior of China in 1948, it rings a bell. And she said, well, Frank and I are, it was our home. And Lila, I'd like to tell you, Lila, she said, you know, I'd never seen this lady in my life, but she knew me. She knew more about me than I knew about myself. Rod, not a day has passed that she hasn't prayed. She prayed for Dawson every day till God took him home. Then she put Lorne and Lucy in his place. She's not missed one day. They haven't. Praying for me since then. They never have missed a day praying for our worldwide organization. I don't know about you, but that's humbling to me. And lest I forget Virginia. Virginia and Leroy. And Millie Hopkins. But I'd like to stay with Virginia and Leroy. Everywhere I was entertained to the limit by things that Leroy said and did on this trip that he and Virginia were privileged to take together. And the rich blessing that these two, Virginia and Leroy, were to our gang on foreign soil. Virginia, they remember every word. Every word, every scripture, illustration. It's just it's amazing. And the nationals, they don't forget the dots or the explanation. You know, they can tell you your facial expressions. And they did, Virginia. And Millie. Millie was a very great blessing. Marvelous. In so many places where she went. And it was just a joy to follow in your footsteps. And a great joy for me. But I just praise God for you anew and for Millie and for your lives. I had an evening, I had a dinner at, the first full dinner I had was at Maureen Dawson's home, and it was lamb. You get lamb lots of places in New Zealand. You may hear that it's very cheap to live in New Zealand and you forget it. There's only three things cheaper than what you and I are used to, and that's bread, butter, and eggs. Butter is 20 cents a pound for the richest butter you've ever seen. And eggs are cheap and milk is cheap, but everything else is very expensive in New Zealand. And you know from Christchurch I went to Wellington. And I arrived on Saturday and Mari and Joan, who had just delivered a boy and had driven the car for the first time, I think the baby was 9 days old, met me at the airport and picked up my suitcase, and I about had a heart attack. I said, put that suitcase down. You just delivered a baby. But that's just Joan. Joan is married to Robin Horton, and they had a little boy. And it was about 20 months old when I was there, and then they have this new baby boy. Well, I had seen in year 50, Dawson had sent me abroad, and I had spent a week in Joe and Mari's home when they lived in Manchester, England. And the girls were 7 and 9 years old then, and it had been 21 years since I'd seen them. And it was quite a homecoming for all of us. We had a glorious time. And the next day was Easter. And that early afternoon, Sheena White came and met me at the hotel and took me out about an hour to their leadership and staff conference for New Zealand, where I was to share with the gang. Well, when I walked in, the first person I saw was John Crawford. And I thought of our gang here. Oh, if you could have just been there. John says, "Sit down, Lila June. You know, my name's Lila May. It's May, I mean, but he always calls me Lila June." And he got teary. He said, "Lila, just think of the year that Dawson started praying for where we're sitting." And he said to me, "You know, if we go any further, we'd fall off the earth." And you would. And he said, "You know, Lila June, the New Zealanders have one thing and can do one thing and do one thing that nobody else in the whole wide world can do." He said, "Can you guess what it is?" And I said, "No." "What do you mean they can do one thing and they do? What can that, you know? They're the very first ones up and they're very first ones to say good morning, Lord Jesus." They are too. No one's up earlier than they are. Or before that. They're, you know, just think, you look right there. Look where New Zealand, you have to look to really see it too. And they don't like you to say that, by the way, but there it is. Well, John got teary and then he laughed at me. You know, you could have heard him a mile away. "Here we are," he said, "at your age and my age." I said, "Why do you say your age and my age?" There isn't very much difference in our age, by the way. He said, "Just think all the years it took for God to answer the prayer of this one man, and here we are." I said, "Well, I don't know that he prayed that I'd be sitting here." You know? And he said, "But look who is sitting here, Lila. There isn't a soul in this room right now that isn't a direct result of the faithfulness of Doss." And I'm glad we had that time, because when I got to Hamilton, he was ill. And he got increasingly worse while I was there. And Helen and I took him twice to the doctor, all but carried him. And he got worse and worse. He really did. But I had a wonderful time at that conference. And I saw back here Roger Anderson sitting with a fellow. And I said, "Are you Jim Fox?" I didn't know he didn't like to be called Jim, you know. And he was leaning out like this. And he almost fell over like this, you know. He told me later that it fairly shocked him. And after the meeting, Joe put me with various ones, and Jim was sitting to my left. James Fox was sitting to my left. And John Crawford was sitting at that table. And James asked a question, and John said, "Lila, do you mind if I answer it?" And I said, "No, I'd be glad for you to answer it. You know, anything." And he said, "I was at the Glen. Will was here. That time, Will, this is before our gang moved in. And, I'll skip that part. After our gang moved in, I'll just tell you this part of it. John said that DeLong, Dick, what's DeLong's first name? You know, Dick. Jerry? No, Jerry DeYoung was here, and his fiancée had arrived. And he went to John and asked if his fiancée could stay here for a few days. And John says, "Well, we don't have a bed. There isn't one bed. There isn't any room at all for her." And he says, "Well, do you mind if I go ask Doss?" He says, "No, I don't mind." So John said, so I tugged along with him, you know, tagged along with him. And he said to Dawson, Dawson, my fiance has just arrived and I would like for her to stay here a few days. Would it be all right? He said, yes. It would. Now, John's telling us for a purpose. And boy, I'd never heard this story. And strengthened me a few times on this trip. Dawson said, yes, she can stay, of course. He said, we don't have a bed. He says, John, do we have a bed? John says, no. He says, well, make one. Well, it'd been a long time since I heard anyone talk like that, you know. John said, make one. Yeah, you know, hammer, piece of wood, you know. You make the bed and I'll get the mattress. And I added at that table, I could write a little pamphlet on my roommates. You know, if there wasn't a bed, Dawson gave him his, you know. Well, John got real tickled. And then he began to burn. And I said, what are you laughing at? And he said, didn't want me to ask him, you know, there. He was crying, really. Well, he asked me later what he was laughing about. And if you'd like to know, I'll tell you individually. About Dawson giving his bed up. That's what it's about. But I had all kinds of bed partners that Dawson gave his bed up for. But you know, this girl did stay, and she stayed those weeks, and there was a bed because it was made for her. And the reason he told this is because when I was speaking, one of the things I said, one of the last things Dawson said to me before he was called home by drowning 12 hours later was this. You know, sweetheart, ask big. Ask big of a big God. You know, if he doesn't have the answer, he can make it. You know, it's easy to forget, isn't it? And beloved, I'll say to you tonight, ask big. Ask big. If he doesn't have the answer, he can make it. And three times in my spiritual diary, he made it for me. He made the answer. He'll do it for you too. From then a couple brought me back to my hotel, an hour's ride, who wanted some time that night. And then the next day I met at Jimmy and Selene Chu. Now for Jimmy and Selene, put on your prayer list to pray for them. The cold is killing them, really. I have never seen such wind in my entire life. Wellington is a land of the wind. And it just takes your hair and go, you know. You just, no kidding. I'm not exaggerating. And Selene's skin looked bad to me, but she said, you know, Lila, I'm just very encouraged because my skin is so clear in comparison. I thought, oh my word, it must have been terrible. But see, she's Oriental. She's Chinese and she's from Malaysia. They're from Hong Kong. Anyway, they're Chinese. I didn't know till this trip that they're Chinese. And their skin was very, very thin because of the hot country they're from. And here they are in a cold country and where it snows, but snows good. And they have a home, brand new to them, and it has central heating, and it's hard to come by in almost any country you go into. In that part of the world, central heating. And anyway, he goes to the university, Jimmy does, and she stays home and has her contacts come to the house. And so, therefore, she's able to withstand this weather better. And those who come are New Zealanders, and they're used to the weather. So, Wellington is a land of hills. It's a miniature of San Francisco in as far as the hilly country goes. And Jim and Selene are much loved and beloved, and you'd think they'd been there all their lives. It's just thrilling. And Roy said to Jimmy Chu, you know Jimmy, when he was just trying to decide where God wanted him to go, he said, you know, you dare not go where you have to speak Chinese, because you'll never be able to speak Chinese without an accent, and you won't be accepted. And Jimmy told me that Roy speaks fluently and just like a Chinaman. And he said, I could never do it. And neither could Selene. Both of them are Chinese. So he said, you want to go to a country where, an English-speaking country, I think, or else go where you have to learn a new language that wouldn't be Chinese. So God led them here. their first choice. They were perfectly willing to go to Indonesia. And after I've been to Indonesia, I can see why you have maybe a little tug at your heart. It isn't an easy country. We had a rally at their home for those that were at this leadership conference. Their families, some of them, came up and met them, and so they were all there, and it was crowded, clear to the doors, their home was. Then I was in their home for a luncheon that she had cooked, which was Chinese. I've never tasted better in my entire life. And we had a glorious time. And the next day was their 9th wedding anniversary, Jimmy and Selene. They are outstanding and precious indeed. And I did not leave the country without seeing everyone, including Roger Clyburn, and having time with him. I had time with everyone in that country. Then I flew to Hamilton, which is where the Crawfords live, and Helen and the children met me with a young man at the wheel because John was ill. And for you who are on here at the Glen and who gave toward bikes for those kids, well, let me tell you, you were led of the Lord. And at the airport, Jay said to me, he fairly shook when he said, "Annie Lila, we have neighbors." Well, it may not mean much to you, but when you live in the pink house over here, who's your neighbor? And especially a child to play with. Excited as all get out. The children have all but forgotten America. Really? I want to ask Bon if she'd like to go back with me. She says, no. I said, really? No. No, she was. She works overtime and trying to speak like a Kiwi. And it's just thrilling to hear her, really. And she does real well, by the way. And John, you can hear him laugh, you know, down the block. The first night there, we were up till 12. And that's the last real time I had with John. I stayed my distance from him and talked to him from a distance because we really didn't know what he had. But I had a wonderful, Helen and I had tea with their pastor and his wife, and the pastor said this to me, "You know, Mrs. Trotman, I have been knowing the navigators, of the navigators, and knowing the navigators for many years. And I haven't agreed with, and I don't agree. And no, he said, and I didn't agree with some things that you stood for." And he said, "And to my church came John and Helen Crawford." And I thought, uh-oh. Well, God has used this man, John Crawford, to answer all of his questions. As far as the navigators are concerned, he couldn't be more sold, this pastor. And they became members of this church. Now, John and Helen didn't know this at all. They didn't know this until, and Helen missed some of it because she was out with Bonnie out of the room. But they're delightful. And then we had a meeting that night in the Pomeroy's home. And first we listened to James Fox's testimony on the television. And he was being interviewed by a Muslim, a gentleman. And we learned afterwards that he had hours and hours with that Muslim. James Fox did, and presented the gospel in a very clear way. And he was already thanking God for this man, this Muslim salvation, because he just knows he's going to be saved. I haven't heard whether he has been or not. And from Hamilton, I flew back up to Auckland on my way to Australia. And the Eric Wilsons were there to meet me and took me out in the country by car, and we had early tea. And then came back in because Joe was flying in. Joe Simmons, you know, wherever, he was there. And bless his heart, he came to see me off and then to have 2 or 3 days with Rog Anderson because Rog was invited by Joe to these two countries and as a survey trip. And I had to keep reminding myself that my trip was not a survey trip. I wasn't there for that type of observation. But Rog, bless his heart, how he's grown. Then I flew over to Melbourne, and the Soder Homes met me. And I do not know anyone who can possibly keep up with Harv Soderholm. What a man of God. And how God is using this couple and their three children. And Joyce played the piano and her three girls sang, and it was priceless. It really was. And I met with their women. I met with the men first in the afternoon for several hours. And then that night for several hours, I met with the women and in their home. They have a lovely home, by the way. Their kitchen and family room is very Western and looks very American, their kitchen and their whole house does, but those two rooms particularly. And they did not have dining room or living room furniture, and were afraid to get living room furniture, afraid it'd become so comfortable that their men would fall asleep, and so they've kept it with no furniture. So it's kind of hard to sit up and sit down, and you know. But while I was there, a doctor, Mr. and Mrs. are both Dr. War. They're both medical doctors, husband and wife. And the husband asked us to come over, so we went by, and they received a beautiful dining room table, just beautiful thing. And we ate off of it that night that I was there. Then I flew to Sydney, and at the airport was Jack and May Griffin, and I had never met them before. And some of you, if not all of you, know them. Well, he and Harv would make a team. And here he is just getting over 2 years of broken health. And I thought, if he's like this when he isn't well, I told him, you know, I'd hate to be around when you're well, Pappy. You know, I really got to know them real well. They were marvelous to me, marvelous to me, as everyone was. We have a gang second to none, I'm telling you. We have a couple in Sydney that I put down in my book to talk to Lauren about. And I said, you know, Lauren, I was going to say, you know, Lauren, we have a couple in Sydney that I don't think is going to be there very long. I believe God will call him to another field. He's absolutely outstanding. That's Marv Smith. And he never, ever struck me this way in the States. He never did. And I told him so. He just didn't. I've always loved this couple. They've had a very special place in my heart, and I prayed for them, and she's his equal. They're outstanding, and here come, find out, I get a letter from her, you know, and come December, she says they'll be telling their country goodbye because they've heard they won't be coming back to that country. They are loved and beloved, and he has men that won't quit. Jack Griffin has men all over the place, and I was constantly meeting his young converts, his older ones who've led theirs, and he's a great, great grandfather over and over again. And Lauren wanted that I have 3 days of rest and R&R there before I left that country. Well, I took the 3 days, R&R, and I was in a motel about 5-minute walk from their house. And nothing would do but that I have to come over there for evening meals. And then the first day of my R&R, she wanted to take me to town, and I went to town, and I didn't know really what I was in for, but she can walk the legs off of a billy goat. She's older than I am. They're just 12 years old as Christians, or they were when I was there, and they're outstanding couple. They're precious to each other. They're older, they're grandparents, but they're marvelous Christmans. And they really know the word. And they have prayer lives that I just ask God to help let some of it rub off on me. And then the second day, we were gone hours, by the way, and then the second day they took me out to the kangaroo farm. And I'd had my hair done that day, and the girl who did my hair was born and raised in Australia. She's never seen a kangaroo. And she says, most Americans think they just go down the highway and byways and lickety-pal, but she'd never seen one, and so the koala bear, a little tiny darling little thing that lived in these eucalyptus trees and sleep on the limbs, were there too, and so I enjoyed that immensely. We have a couple that I personally hadn't heard very much about ever, and I had never, ever met them, and their names are Ray and Grace. E-W-E-R-S is the way you spell their last name. And they have a house full of children that, well, it was a joy to be in their home. A joy to be in their home. Obedient children, but all all there, you know. And very polite. And you could feel the Lord's presence in that home. And from there we went to the Smith's home for a wives' meeting, for a buffet dinner and for a meeting. Good. And after I went to my room that night, I'd like to share with you what the Lord led me to read. In Philippians 1:10-11 in the Amplified, it says, "Learn to sense what is vital, and approve and prize what is excellent, and of real value, and abound in and be filled with fruits of righteousness." This is their home. To me, it bespeaks of them. And Proverbs 10:19 says, "Anyone willing to be corrected is on the pathway to life. Hearts must be open and teachable." That's Proverbs 10:17. In Living Psalms, Psalms 12:1 says, "Lord, help. Godly men are fast disappearing. Where in all the world can dependable men and women be found?" And I was constantly spoken to by the lives of our gang. Dependable. Men and women who are learning to walk with God and to wait patiently for His timing. It's easy to wait, but it's hard to patiently wait. Then we have a couple that I'd never met, and I understand that Franklin was here in the States, Franklin Elliott. Well, he has a wife that's choice. You think so, Virginia? She's outstanding. And they have two beautiful sons, little boys. They're just a young couple. And I believe God's hand is on this couple in an unusual way. I really do. I think we're going to be hearing great things from them in days ahead. Well, I was deeply touched. From Australia, I went to Jakarta. And when I arrived, this Indonesia, and when I arrived there, the Norse were there to meet me, Jim and Carolyn. And it was, I had this dress on, and I was perspiring. And all the front of my dress, I didn't realize until later, it had changed colors. And it was dirt and grime and powder, that's how hot it was. And we stayed all night in Jakarta. They had gotten me a hotel room, and then they were staying with some friends. And I rested and showered, and we went to dinner at an outstanding Christian man and his wife home that night. And the next morning, about 9:45, we left in an air-conditioned car for that 100-mile trip to Bandung. Have you taken it, Rod? Well, I would like you to invite you to go and take it. Did you take it, Virginia?
No, but my daughter did.
And your husband did. Well, I loved it. And I guess I'm the only one that they've ever heard say that. It's 100 miles. It took 4.5 to 5 hours. It's 2-lane highway, and you name it, and we missed it. I have never taken a trip like it. I took it twice. Going into Bandung. Bandung is 3,000 feet, and you definitely know that it's cooler. It's still hot to me, but it was cooler. And that's where Vern and Elsie Bache and their family live. And that's where Al and Becky Moyer, I'd never met them before, and that's where they live. And also Jim and Carolyn with their North and their family. And Marcia Elliott is there, and Marcia seems like a different person to me. She seems like a new person. God's hand is richly on her life. She's loved and beloved and has hearts of the girls. And in 1930, I went back into Dawson's diary, and in the early 30s, Dawson prayed for Dutch New Guinea. And I saw what he asked God for. And here I sit, Dutch New Guinea today, beloved, in part, is Indonesia. And I'm sitting right here on this sacred soil. And just before Jim introduced me. And just before I was to speak, he asked the nationals to sing "How Great Thou Art" in their native tongue. Well, I came unglued. I remember being in Beatenburg, Switzerland, at an all-nations conference, and hearing all these nations sing the same song in their tongue, and I had never heard anything quite like it till I sat here. And I only came unglued twice publicly on this trip, and this was one of them. That house was full. It was the Norse home, and Jim interpreted for me. And this is the first time I'd had anyone interpret on this trip. And he had a real working over, and he was perspiring profusely. And then in walked Ken, this Ken Thomas, I believe his name is. That's just an outstanding man of God. He is an Indonesian. And then he took over, and was a little bit easier for me after that. But Jim did beautifully, and he has a terrific work, by the way. He has a terrific team. He has his gang is sold out, completely sold out, and eager to learn and to hear, and they want an answer to their questions. They don't want you to beat around the bush. They just want you to come out and be very honest about it. And we had some rich times in the Word, by the way. I lived with the Baches in their home. That was my first introduction to seeing something crawl on the wall, you know. And to ask Elsie about it, and she said, well, they're lizards, and they kill all the bugs and mosquitoes. And she said, now, just before she left my room, she says, now, just only one time did one fall on me, you know. Well, nothing fell on me that I know of, but I had a glorious time in their home. And I don't know whether you're conscious of the fact or not, gang, but in so many countries, along with the ministry and along with the heat and along with the trials that come, they have thieves. And this is one place where they have them. And when the Al Moyers came first to the country, they had just been there a few months when I arrived, they stayed with the Baches. And so I saw the room where they stayed, and they had gotten a new bedspread for their bed. And Al and Becky had the bed littered with paperwork, and when they were called to dinner, and so just left it like it was and went. Well, they heard a noise while they were eating and investigating, and in due time found that the bedspread had been jerked off that bed. You see, the windows have bars on them, and so they just, you have to keep your window shut when you're not in the room, because they have a long pole with a thing on like this that can just get anything, you know. And by the way, since so many of them have been grabbed, they now put razor blade along the ones who were stealing. So when you grab it, you cut. Well, we had some glorious meetings. I had wonderful meetings, a wonderful time with the couples, and Marcia was always included in that. And then Elsie gave a tea in her home for missionaries. And Presbyterians, missionary ladies were there, Baptists, a great many Baptists, and many young, new missionary girls were there. And then MAF, and I knew the MAF girls, and Wycliffe, and I knew them. And There were three missionaries there who knew Doss in China. Two missionaries in China and their husbands. And their husbands are still living, and they're old, they're elderly, really. And they had quite a story to tell of Dawson's time in their home. And that's, if you'll recall, that's when Dawson got sick overseas in 48. And I met the two that nursed him back to health, and it was a great privilege to look into their eyes and thank them face to face. Then from the north took me back that 100 miles. So altogether, you see, I had 10 hours or 12 with the north just going and coming. And if the Lord spares my life and grants me my wish, I'm going to drive that 100 miles someday. Yeah, because I think it'd be a real challenge to me. I'd like to drive it before I'm 79, so I don't have very many years left, but I'd like to do that. I have never seen so much on a street in my life for about 75 miles. Now, I heard about Leroy. Leroy was in this car, and Jim just thought, oh, isn't this wonderful to have somebody in the car that enjoys this trip so wonderfully? Well, he never ever said a word that would indicate that he didn't like it, you know? And Jim said that he was speaking in another country, and he heard, listen, gang, there's one stretch of land that I'll never go by car again. It doesn't make sense. Can't you just hear Leroy? And here, Jim thought he was enjoying it. So Jim asked me about 10 times, are you sure you were being honest with me? I said, I'm being honest. Yeah, I love it. I laughed like it was going out of style. I loved every mile of it. It just tickled me. We all but hit a boy, and we all but hit a car, but we lived through it, and here we are. But they have a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful work. I think they need special prayer, right? They do now with Jim and Carolyn in the States, and particularly Jim in the States, because the leadership is in Vern's hands. Then from there, from Jakarta, I went to Singapore, and you who know me real well know that I have lived for this day. It's a real personal desire of mine to go back, and what I saw, I wasn't expecting this trip. In Singapore. Singapore was a land of swamps and huts and hovels that just broke me up. They still have them in part, but not the city. The city has completely changed. It has high rises everywhere. Everywhere. They have a ministry in one that they call a cement city. And it's just a city. And it's all cement. You know, the grounds, the buildings, and they have quite a ministry there. Dave and Mary Dawson, I believe God's hands on them in a real way. Joanne Ray is a different woman altogether than when you saw her last. She's just different. She has five countries living in her home. Five countries. And I met them, and I was there. And I was thrilled, about half out of my mind. I was so excited. And then here's Warren, and I arrived at the end of a one-day conference. And I spoke 2 hours, and wasn't through but finished. And so Dave Dawson got up and led in a song and talked to me in the meantime, and asked if I would be willing to go on and finish. And I said, well, I think the gang's tired. So all those that wanted to leave left. And so we had 2.5 more hours. Now, this is the end of a full day. And this man, Dave Dawson, no grass grows anywhere near him. He's he tells it like it is, and he doesn't mince matters from the Word of God, and they love it. He has strong men and women, by the way. They had a garden party, garden dinner. At their home, and there were people everywhere. And Dave was rather put out when I got there because he and Mary are light sleepers, and to get to their bedroom, you have to go by the boys' room. They have two sons. And they hear them if they, that much, you know. Well, a fellow had been in their room and had taken his trousers. And he had just gotten $150 in whatever their money is, I forget now. And it was $50 in our money, and it burned him up. I mean, he was burned up to think that somebody was in his room. So he said, I was so mad. He said, I went down the next day, and I thought, I'm going to find out how they got in here. So he found out how they got in there. And then he went out, and he pulled them. What do you call a grate? Is it a grate, Doris, over the windows to keep the... Do you call it a grate? Well, you know, steel. So he just, in desperation, he just took a hold of that and pulled it to think that how they got in there, and it just came off in his hands. Well, he went in and got down on his knees and asked God to forgive him for his attitude. And then he said, well, Lord, forgive me. Getting mad, attitude, nothing. You know, I just got mad. Now show me what to do. So he sent to the States for 5 electric eyes. I feel sorry for anyone who comes near his house. And it's all open, so you can see when they go in their room. You can stand out in the street and just see all the activity because of the way their house is arranged and how open it is. And it's so hot you have to keep it open while you're awake, at least. And but this is what our gang faces, almost everywhere I was. Ken Metzger, well, I'm getting ahead of my story, but he put their house in order over there. They don't have any problem now. But in Singapore, Warren and Ruth have a tremendous setup, and he has Scotty has given him 4 or 5 countries, had given to him before I arrived. And there is an outstanding couple. They have fruit that is remaining and will remain. And their fruit, some of it has had fruit. Their home is a wonderful home to be in. I'm so glad she had warned me that Brian doesn't talk, because he has always talked to me, and he's always talked a leg off of me. And I believe he said 10 words. He wasn't rude. He just answered when he was asked something, and he calls Warren Dad, and she calls him Dad, and she does the cooking 4 or 5 nights a week for money. She puts a lot of love in it, and she cooked the dinner the night I was there. I've never had better fried chicken and never better Walter salad in my entire life, that girl. She had a little outfit on that she had made, sewn herself. So they're being beautifully taught. And every Sunday, they have a family Bible study, just the 4 of them. And the children are very free. For you chaplains that are here, by the way, they scared me half out of my mind. You know, it's tough enough to meet the gang and talk to the gang, and then to walk in here and be introduced to 4 chaplains. I thought I'd missed my calling. But for you chaplains, her first husband was taken by cancer. He's married. He's a Dentler twin. And his brother and his wife are down in the Philippines now. And some 7 or 8 years later, God led that she and Warren Myers were to be married. You couldn't find a deeper couple and a more consecrated couple if you looked the world over, and a couple who spend much time on their knees together. And on their knees together, reading God's word, by the way. So it was a very rare privilege for me to be in their presence even. To be in the home was greater still. I'm just deeply touched. Lorne and his men, Jim Downing, Rod Sargent, Jerry Bridges, and I could name your husbands. I praise God for the men that God has given to work close with Lorne. Dick Fisher. And now he sent George here and Walter Hendrickson. Jerry Marshall. Along with you men, listen, Rod, he's giving you some wonderful men out there. You have men that you have to get up before breakfast to be ahead of, and I doubt if you'd be very much ahead of them. I wouldn't at all. not in that league. Different ball game. But it's a man's work in a man's world, and it's glorious. And it's glorious for the girls that have the privilege of working with them. And I'm one of those women. I'm not a girl, but I qualify as a girl. From Singapore, I went to Malaysia, and I couldn't wait to get to Malaysia because of Joan. I had sitting one day at Warren Meyer's home, and Warren says, Scotty left today for America. And I said, I beg your pardon. And he said, Scotty left for America today. I said, I thought that's what you said. I said, you're not supposed to see him. And he left for America. Well, I went on, and Paul and Margaret Hensley and Joan and met me at the airport. When I got in, these are Singapore. It was very hot. Seemed a little bit cooler to me in Malaysia. And I love Malaysia, by the way. And by the way, in Singapore, I went out. Dave took me out to where Roy and Phyllis, I could hardly stand it because Roy and Phyllis weren't there, but I went out to see their home where they used to live. And it's just awfully hard to know when what to tell you and what not to. I was introduced to Dr. Chu, who was Jimmy's father, at his store, and the next day he called and he asked if he could bring his wife, and he brought his wife and his son, Ernest, who looks just exactly like Jimmy. And they came up to my room. Dave Dawson had gotten me a suite at the Equatorial Hotel in Singapore, which is managed by a Christian, an outstanding man of God. And I had a beautiful, beautiful suite, beautiful thing. And I had been paying quite a bit for my room. And this whole thing, I had twin beds and a lovely bathroom and this big living room. It was beautifully furnished. And it, as I recall, it was just 14-something a day. And in Jakarta, I paid $23, you know, for one night. So that gives you a little, for one room. So it gives you an idea of what it's all about. But then from there, I went over to, and I was anxious to be with the Scots. And it was a great, great joy, just a tremendous joy. And I had never, ever had any time with Carrie. In fact, I didn't know her. I'd spoken to her, and that was it. And I really fell in love with her, and she certainly has been God's choice one for her position. Then in this office, Scotty has a girl, a national by the name of Vivian, who's Chinese, and then he has his own secretary, is a Malaysian fella, and then Carrie's in that office, and then the kitchen's in between Scotty's office and theirs, and it's the first time on this foreign soil that Scotty's had an office. And then later I did get to see Scotty for many, many, many hours in Tokyo. But we had a meeting in Joan's home, and if you'll recall, maybe you won't, but two missionaries just before I left the States had been sent home from Malaysia and their families because they presented the gospel of Jesus Christ to some Muslims. And so Joan had warned me about this, and I had remembered that. So here I am. I'm to speak at a tea. And in the tea is everything, you know. And particularly I was conscious of these Muslims, women, and that they were there. I didn't know which one was who, but I knew they were going to be there. So Joan thought if I just gave my testimony. Well, I said, I can't give my testimony without using the name of Jesus Christ. She said, that's a lot different than presenting the gospel of Jesus Christ. Oh, I got the picture. So we went ahead. We had a very rich time, very rich time. I had hours and hours and hours with Paul and Margaret, whom I didn't know. I just spoke to them, and that was it on this side. Then they had their very first meeting in their new home while I was there, of the fellows and girls, and God met us all the way. And it was just fun in these countries to see the girls in the native costumes. I just love it, these long dresses. Many of them are in short dresses, and they're shorter than short. But they're dressed anyway. And it's hot. Very hot country. From Malaysia, I came back to Singapore for 2 hours and had those 2 hours with Dave Dawson at the airport, and they were ordered of the Lord. Maybe just I'll throw this in, might interest you. I had just arrived at their home, and I was sitting at a table under a overhead fan, and Mary and Joanne, or just a lot of girls and fellows were there. And Dave Dawson said, I'm going to do something for you. He said, if my mother was here, I'd do this for my mother, and you're the second best thing to my mother, so I'm going to do it for you. Well, you know, I sat there in my bare face hanging out. And I didn't know what he's talking about, and so I didn't really pay very much attention. Really, I didn't. And cause I didn't have the slightest idea what he's talking about, and I didn't want to ask him. And I didn't. Well, the next day he brought this up to me, and so then on Tuesday they took me, or on the next day they took me to a store of Thai silk. Everything in it was Thai silk. And when I walked into this Thai silk place, I thought, Gloria, is this what he had in mind? And I froze when he said, I want you to choose material for a dress and a coat. Well, how do you choose with all this Thai silk, you know? Well, anyway, I'm the recipient today of a lovely dress and coat. The next, that afternoon at 4 o'clock, we saw a Chinese seamstress with marvelous Christian woman. And the next afternoon at 1:30, I had the coat and dress on. And then he sent it home by sea mail for me. And then when I came back for those 2 hours, he said, you know, Lila, you know me well enough. Oh, and she, you know me well enough to know I don't do things halfway. Well, I didn't know what he was talking about, you know. I immediately thought of the area. And he said, I want to give you money to have a pair of shoes made in Hong Kong and lined. And here's a piece of the material. He gave me a piece of the material of the coat. And as he told me goodbye, he said, in your cosmetic bag, I put money to pay for the shoes. And it was two $10 bills. So here I am with a pair of shoes that match the coat and a little evening bag that matches the coat. And the coat's lined like the dress. I said, apart from my sons, since Dawson went home to be with the Lord, this never happened to me by any man. It melted me. But then I came back for those 2 hours on my way to the Philippines. Well, the Philippines is a story which I could take all night on, really. The Philippines is the hottest country I think it's the hottest heat I have ever endured, ever. And I endured it. Our gang do not know how to spell the word dry. I mean, I praise the Lord as I endured it. I had to endure it, you know. You know, you endure it with a smile on your face and water coming down your face. But I don't think our gang over there know how to spell the word dry. I didn't know on this trip, Rod, that they don't have running hot water. I didn't know that. The Tabers have 6 children. And she was telling about this, was it a monsoon or typhoon that came in and took Faith, the academy? And remember before I went, what was it? It was a typhoon? Anyway, it took their water. And so Helen was telling me one evening, Helen Tabor, and she said, so we just went and got it, you know, got some water right out here. And so it really wasn't much trouble. Jean says, let me tell it. She didn't do the hauling of the water. She makes it sound like it's next door and went 2.5 blocks. Hauled all their water. See, we don't think of those things over here. Really, we don't. Until our water's turned off. You know? But, you know, I like our men, what they did. They cut me in right away on the scoop. They sat down and went over a list with me and who's there. And just cut me in, you know. And then showed me what my schedule was. Well, this is what Gene Tabor did. He asked to have dinner with me that night alone for the first part of it. And then his wife joined us after the children were put to bed. And so he went down my whole schedule. And when I saw that, I thought I better go home. I just didn't think I could do it. I really didn't. Then I got to think, well, this is a day at a time. Now, I arrived in the afternoon, and it was very, very hot. And the two families, the Sacketts and the Tabors, met me at the airport, and we took two taxis and came home, came to my hotel. And all the windows were down, and it's very, very hot, and the wind blowing. Can you possibly imagine what we look like? And I forgot to tell you that when we started the 100 miles out of Jakarta into Bandung, the 45 minutes out, the air condition went out in the car. So we rolled the windows down. It was hot as it could be, and our hair was in corkscrews when we arrived, you know. And filthy, I could take and write my name on dirt on my face. But we're in this country, and I had time with 16 girls in my room, one, two, or three at a time. But I had time individually with those 16 girls, and then they came in twos and threes. They all, every day, some girls brought me a fresh bouquet, and as I walked into my room, it was filled with flowers and fruits of all kinds, really. Anytime they come, they bring you gifts, and just today I received my very first one from the Philippines, and all the rest are on. I haven't received things from the Philippines or from Japan. I have from everywhere else now. But it was just outstanding. I had time with all the couples as couples. I had time with every wife alone and every husband alone. I thought I wasn't going to get to see Dean Dendler. They were on vacation when I arrived, and she came back early, and then he came back just a day or so before I left, and I had dinner with him on a Sunday at their home, which I thoroughly enjoyed. But I, Gene Tabor is a Filipino. He looks like a Filipino. He thinks like a Filipino. He dresses like a Filipino. And all of our men have these long, like Russ Reed here, that, you know, have these long here. Yeah. You saw Jim North, I suppose. Did he still have it when he's here? Some of these men, I'd look twice to see who they were, you know. And you should see Warren Mason. He really looks good with his. And but I thoroughly enjoyed the rich time and the rich fellowship and the wonderful meetings that we had in the Philippines. Rami is choice. He's in Kenya tonight. They have a fella from Singapore, Bill. Tom. He's there for 2 years cross-training. He's just outstanding. They have sent a girl to Singapore that's, I just wondered how many thousands of women she would be touching when I met her and sat with her and listened to her. It was a rare privilege for me. Some from every nation, every tribe, every color. And I love the Oriental, and I felt right at home. I really love them. And after seven glorious days, hard, long days, and long nights, it was tough and wearing, I went to Hong Kong for 7 days rest and to shop and have clothes made. Well, the prices have soared since I was there in 58, so I only had two things made. But I did do shopping for 29 people. But the thing that was outstanding to me was that I took the ferry and went over to Hong Kong. You see, I'm in Kowloon, and Hong Kong is an island. And from Kowloon, I went over to on the Hong Kong side and walked the distance till I found the cemetery where Dean Dendler's laid to rest. And that was one of the highlights of my whole trip, was being there. I went twice while I was there those 7 days. And I rode the ferry because I wanted to get acquainted and see if I could talk to the nationals, because I wanted to learn all I could about ancestral worship on this trip. And I thought the best way for me to learn was to ask them, so I did. And I just boldly asked. And they were a little hesitant at first, and then soon they got to talking. And so I learned a great deal about worshiping idols and worshiping ancestors on this trip. And I think that it's enriched my life a great deal. And I trust it'll grow. From Hong Kong, I went to Formosa. And I arrived in Taipei, and Jake and Vera Combs and their two children were there to meet me, and Barbara Lamb, who is an outstanding girl. She really isn't very old as a Christian, but she's an outstanding girl, and she's tireless and fearless, and has she's a school teacher, and she went over to teach there. She's since moved in with Jake and Vera in Taichung, which is about 3 hours by train from there, from Taipei. Well, I stayed in the King's Hotel there, and we had dinner that night in a very an outstanding place. And the Liao's were there, David and his wife, and then the heads of Dick Hillis's work were with us, and it was a very rich evening for me. And the next day they had a noon tea, and which wasn't planned. Scotty came along and said, well, Dawson and Lila are known here. And so it was a very choice time, by the way. Then we took the evening train, Jake and Vera and the children and I, and went the 3 miles, 3 hours, and Bill Lee met us and took me to my hotel and them to their home. I had a rich time while I was in Taichung, and if Marina, I wish you'd remember to tell Jim. Where is she? Chico? Yes. Well, Virgil and Esther Hook, and he was our fifth navigator, and they live in Taichung, and I didn't know this. And I had not seen them for 21 years, and very few men in our work meant to me what Lester Spencer and Gurney Harris, Ed Goodrick and Virgil Hook meant to me. I was young, very young, when we started our work, and he was the fifth man led to the Lord, Virgil Hook. And he's out the Chinaland Mission, which isn't known as the Chinaland Mission today, but that's they're still out under them. Well, I had a very rich and rewarding time in Taichung. And Jake and Vera had just moved from Singapore, and they thought Vera would have quite an adjustment. And if you could see where they moved to and where they moved from, you could understand why. I mean, here they can move from a modern city to hardly no city. And the main street that you leave a main street, and then you take the main street of this little hamlet to get to their house. And it's a pathway. You know, you drive down this pathway. And their home's here, with the women pouring human refuge right out on the street. And across here are homes. And here's a business. I mean, they sell vegetables and fruits. And then here's a puppet show. And then here are cows and ducks and geese. And you cross a bridge, and on this side, they're pouring human refuge in the water. And on that side of the bridge, they're washing their utensils. And it just did something to me, this whole, every time I took this trip. No one moves and I had to figure this out, why no one moved when you toot a horn or when you come in your car. So I said to Jake, would you kind of help me with this? You know, they don't move. Is it because they have never driven in a car? Yes. Well, is it because they don't know about timing? Yes, exactly. Yes. So we were in a car in a hurry. And he tooted the horn, and boy, the old gentleman just stayed right in the middle of the road. He didn't move. You know, and we had to go his pace, and he was walking, and he was old. But I know Virgil's Hook's wife came to their home with us, and she says, my word, I haven't seen this kind of living for years and years. She lives in Taichung. So it gives you an idea what the street's like. And it's the only way you can get to Jake and Vera's house is to go this road. Just absolutely. And I took it many times because I stayed in a hotel always. I only stayed in Elsie's home until I got to Seattle. I stayed one night with the Boardmans, but that was the last night in town. But I stayed in hotels always. But I was deeply touched by Formosa, because I put some prayer into that country. And when Vera came back with me the 3 hours, she and I alone on the train, and David Leal met us. And no one, but no one could have... You know, David Leal is with Dick Hellis's work. What's the name of that work? What is it? Overseas what?
Crusade,
yeah. And he's just absolutely a godly man and such a gentleman. And he took the best of care of us and got a taxi, took us to the airport, took us to lunch. Well, he took care of... I couldn't keep up with him. He took care of all of my business at the airport. You know, would you have to fill out this and do this and pay this and, you know. And then carried my bag to the airlines, or out to the door, to where you go through customs and no one can enter. But beautifully cared for, and a real answer to someone's prayer, because I didn't pray about it at all. You know, I just asked the Lord to protect me and to help me to help someone else, and in turn I was helped. And just thrilling. It's wonderful to be in the family of the living God. There's no life like it. And with a few things I've been through, I turn right around and do it all over again. A few hard things, I mean. I take it all again. I really would. And I haven't outgrown hard things. From Formosa, I went to Okinawa. And this was not on my schedule, but I asked Lauren if I could put it on, because this is servicemen's work, and that's where my heart, a good bit of my heart is, and that's where our work started, you know. We started with the servicemen, with the sailors, aboard the USS West Virginia, and that's where Jim Downing was. Well, I tell you, that was a heartwarming experience. And then to be in our home over there, I'd been in before. I didn't even recognize it. I was there when Newkirks were there. And Doris's honey, Ken and Doris, had really redone that home. You can sit in that living room and watch a typhoon come in and just sit there and enjoy it, if you can enjoy a typhoon. Never comes in the home, not even a drop, thanks to Ken. It's fantastic what Ken has done to that home, and I got to see every square foot of it. Fantastic. They've changed it some inside since the Fleming's. She's carrying a little one, by the way, and it's due November, I believe it is. Margaret was carrying, as far as they knew when I was there, she was carrying a little one, Margaret Hensley. And then another wife that's carrying a baby new for sure was Joyce Sackett. And by the way, was it ever a thrill to be in their home and to see the Tabers and the Sackett serving God as a team? It was fantastic to me. Really, they work and live and operate as one. And I was reminded of Carolyn and Russ Reed. You know, God doesn't give every one of us the same gifts. And Russ and Carolyn, and I used this couple on this trip, by the way. I just did. I used it as an example. They have a unique gift, this couple. And we know a few in our work, Rod, like this, you know, of giving themselves to others. Just that's what they live for, is others. And to see if there's a better way they can serve you. And if there is, they find out about it, they do it. Well, I met some like this on this trip. And I was deeply touched. I was deeply touched with what I saw and heard and felt in Okinawa. Okinawa is like a different place to me. I didn't even recognize it as it was when I was there in 58. Now they have beautiful streets, just real wide, very modern. But, of course, I was interested in the saints and the sinners. And we had I had two meetings with the men, the servicemen. And, well, it'll hold me for a good many years. It was just a tonic for me to be with them. And a chaplain was there, an outstanding chaplain and his wife, and who actually was the one who led Roger Fleming to the Lord. And Raj, for a prayer request, Raj's brother has moved with him, and Raj's brother was 33 when I was there. He's a big, big brute of a guy, big. And Roger's brother isn't normal. He's an abnormal fella, and he's affected mentally. He doesn't read or write. And here he is, 33, and he has become their charge. You see, the mother died, and Roger came home to his mother's last days, and then for her death and funeral. And then he went to live with a brother till the brother was married. Then he was sent to Honolulu to live with his sister and her husband, and their health just completely broke, and especially his sister's under it. So I received not long ago a letter from Jean Fleming, Roger's wife, and asking for a real special prayer. Now, they've gotten him a job as a dishwasher somewhere, washing dishes, and it was a real wonderful... Well, they didn't realize what freedom they had in the home in the daylight hours till he was not there. So I have a heart for a person like this, and I loved him. I talked with him. He talks strangely. He has very bad eating habits, and I'm just telling you this, hoping that you will handle it carefully and pray accordingly. These young kiddies, they won't pick up the good points. They're going to pick up the bad points. Right? That's your life. And it's a real prayer request for Roger and his wife. And Roger's trying. Roger is so... Well, they both are dear to him. They're dear to him. And he's working overtime trying to get the right place for him to be cared for out there. But he is... their charge. He really is. And to me, that's a real charge. You think about having this type of person in your home and with your ministry, you know, and to show real love all the time. And before he got the job, he went everywhere with her when she went shopping, and he's loud and talks loud, and he's very, very heavy. They have him on a diet when I was there. As a result, the whole family was on a diet. Then from Okinawa, I went to Japan, and I was in Okinawa just before it changed hands, and I was there over Memorial Day weekend, and that's quite a weekend, Doris, and that my hotel, the servicemen came alive, and some fellows spoke to me one evening, and I just went like this and smiled because I'd been putting up with them, you know, hour after hour. They were right across from me and just awful. So a fellow stopped me, and he says, "Don't you know I've been to Vietnam?" I said, "No, I didn't know that. I really didn't know that." And he says, "Well, I have, and you can speak to me when you're alive today because of me." And I said, "Oh, no, no. Mm-mm. You don't have anything to do with my being alive." He says, "Well, how come you're alive?" I said, "God made me. And I'm alive because of God tonight. And I thank you for protecting our country while you're over there. But I'm not alive because of you, sir. But I'll be dead because of you if you all don't..." Let up with a little of your noise. He said, "I can sure tell you've never had any children." I said, "Well, tell me about it." So he did. So when he finished, I said, "Well, it might interest you to know that I have 17. "I do. You figure it out. I have 17. I said, "Don't you talk to me about children. I have all ages and all kinds and all types and all problems." "Oh, I see." Well, they got louder, and so the management came up. But this is in Okinawa. And then from there I went to Japan. We stopped and let down in Osaka, and I was very vitally interested in that. And from there to Tokyo, and the Boardmans and Lou Stevens met me, and we went to my hotel in due time. And, you know, it sounds easy. You go into an airport, you know, it sounds like you just go in and like you do in the States. And it's a lot more than that, you know. You have papers to fill out, and you have declarations to make, and my hardest country and the only country I had any trouble in at all was Australia. And on the declaration there, they have drugs, and on my report, I put medicines. And so when I was sent over to a certain color and a certain table in number 3, he just marked out and put drugs. So I had to open my suitcase, and I gave him my thyroid. I take 2 and 3 grain a day. And so I said to him, he opened it, and I said, "Sir, do you mind if I make a suggestion?" And he said, "No, And I said, please don't touch those, because if you do, I can't take them. He says, if I want to touch them, I'll touch them. So there were about 20 called, and they touched them. And I felt that they were dope. I said, how do you spell that? You know, on the outside of it had thyroid, had who the doctor was, the date it was issued and everything, you know. And it held me up 45 minutes. And from then on, I didn't put medicines down or anything like that. So I was never bothered from then on. But Australia has very little trouble with dope. And this is the reason. They just frisk you. They do everything. And I've been through every electric eye that was ever built, I do believe. And I like the idea. I really do. And I like how careful they are. But I've learned a lot in traveling on this trip, this last trip. And from Okinawa, I went to Tokyo and went up to my room at the New Otani. And I think there must have been 30 that came into my room that night. And so I invited them all down for something to eat or drink or whatever they wanted. They could find a dress, fine, and a coat, jacket, you know, it didn't matter. Just go have something, just do something together. So we did. And as I say, the Boardmans were part of this, and we had a glorious, glorious time that night. One thing I learned on this trip, and I learned, my eyes were really open in the Philippines, is that I had time with a gang one by one. And here's what I heard. And I listened carefully. And I heard this repeatedly over and over again. You know why? Why I'm sold out on the navigators? No, I wouldn't have the slightest idea. Why? Why? I'm really anxious to hear. Well, without naming an organization or a denomination on their part, they told me that three of these had gotten interested in a denomination. And they had sent a missionary couple out with some children, and the missionary couple wouldn't allow them in their home, wouldn't allow them in their car. They'd never ate at their table. And the reason being that the missionaries wanted the time free with their children because they in no way wanted their children affected by the national. See? So the thing that they were sold out on and that they could identify with and were sold on was because our gang, and they named them, shared everything they had. They share their home. They share their car. I'm quoting them. They share their car. They share their washing machine and their dryer. They share their Honda, you know. They share the materials. They share their water. They just went on and on, you know, with me. Well, it opened my eyes, and so I began just looking for my own self, you know. And I want to be careful in my own life and not be guilty of that before God and anyone. Dawson used to say, nothing is yours till you give it away, and then it returns 100-fold. Nothing is yours till you give it away. I was in Tokyo 25 days, and Lauren asked me to write Jeannie Boardman and ask her if she'd take the bullet train down to Kobe to see the Hugh Harrises with me, and she did. After I arrived in Tokyo, a missionary's 17-year-old daughter who went to school with Holly and Laurel, and same school as all the children are in, got a headache. And it was got so severe as she went home with this headache. She's a missionary's daughter, and their parents are on the field, and she's a twin. She has a twin brother. Well, to make a long story short, within 10 days she was dead. And it tore the school in two. And I went out to the school for a school program to see the Boardman kiddies and the York children. And the Rhodes children. One of them. And at the school. And the headmaster came out just at the close of the program and said that this girl had taken a turn for the worse, and that it's just a matter of time. Well, they figured out later that while he was giving this report, she died. Well, Jeannie went down with me, but she had to come back early because of this funeral. And so I came back alone. But I thoroughly enjoyed being with Hugh and Phyllis and in their home. And I had not seen them for 8 or 9 years, we figured. And I'd missed their last two time furloughs.
And I thought it was longer than that, but I think 8 or 9. And we had some terrific, terrific meetings, terrific times of fellowship there, and very good meetings. And they have a fellow in there in Kobe that Scotty had warned me about his interpreting for me. He said that he will go ahead of you about a mile and just listen to him. And when he finishes, just make your next point, you know. Well, I was glad he told me that because I thought, goodness, I didn't say that much, you know. So we just listened to him, and he's outstanding. And when we had the girls' meeting, he was my interpreter, and he was thrilled half out of his mind, you know, because he's the only fellow there. And he's nice-looking and a gentleman. He's a gentleman's gentleman. He is real fine. And then I went back into Tokyo for 3 days, and then I left for Korea with Bob Boardman, which Lauren had asked me to write and ask him to go with me. And Scott Morton and another one of our American fellows was on that flight going up into Korea to live for 8 weeks. Well, at the airport, we were met at the airport by Paul and Sukja, and in due time, they invited Bob Boardman and myself, Paul and Sukja, to typical Korean dinner, and we sat on the floor. And after the dinner, Bob Boardman asked Sukja, the wife, to tell me about the death of their 2.5-year-old girl. And as you remember, the child's boy was taken in by the Lord, and when he was 7 months old, just a month before the Paul Hughes, who have charge of our work in Korea, this little girl drowned in their bathtub. And many were praying about our time there, my time there, feeling it was time to the Lord, and I was looking forward to this greatly. And so she sat and she's a precious girl. She's a very good-looking girl. Paul weighs about 100 pounds, her husband, and he's short. To see Bob Boardman and Paul, it's something else. And Suja is a very attractive girl and very pretty. And they have 4 children. Their boy was 7, girl 5, and the baby 1. And I did not know that they'd lost their first child, which was a son, at birth. And I didn't know that. Well, it seems that the water was to be turned off for 2 days. You see, the reason I'm going to take this moment now to tell you this is because they have been persecuted severely by Christians. By Christians. And I heard Billy Graham quote a verse, "Let the righteous smite me, it shall be a kindness. Let him rebuke me, it shall not break my head. Let the righteous smite me." That's the Christ one. "It shall be a kindness." And the worldlian are persecuting them too, terribly. But the hardest of all is Paul's parents. And Hugh and his daughter, Kimberly, got there the day of the funeral. Arrived just in time. And they saw the wailing and the moaning of these parents, of Paul's parents, and it was out of the pit of hell. And they told them that the water be off for 2 days, and so they filled the bathtub, which is an old frame. It isn't shaped like our bathtub. And across on the other side, which isn't very wide across, she put an old-timey dipper like we're used to, you know. And she had a Bible class in her bedroom with women. This daughter, 2.5, and the baby was in there full time, and this daughter just came in and out at will, you know, at random. And she had a helper, a girl in the home. Well, it's just like you mothers. You know, we aren't with our children every minute, or every 10 minutes, or every half hour, you know. We just aren't. You think it through. And she had gone into the kitchen, the helper had. Well, when Suja finished her Bible class, she wanted to go where Paul was, her husband, about a mile away. And so she went into the bathroom. Well, when you enter an Oriental home, you take your shoes off and put on a pair of go-aheads. But before you go into the bathroom, you take those off and put on a very soft little shoe. It isn't even a shoe, it's a little, you know. Well, she saw her shoes at the door. her daughter's shoes. And when she went in, the floor was real wet. And as she stood there, she saw the different colors in the water. And she thought, isn't that strange? Because we scrubbed that tub real good. Because they want this for drinking water, for bath, and for cooking, you know. And she just, before she left the bathroom, she just went over and looked in, you know, to be able to tell Paul. And when all of a sudden, she saw clothing. And pulled this out, and this was her daughter. And she ran into the bedroom, and they tried artificial everything, you know. Everybody's sopping wet, and the house was sopping. She ran up the street to a doctor, but the child was gone. And it was about an hour before his parents got the word. No, I'm telling it wrong. It was about an hour before Paul got the word. I don't know just when the parents got the word. But this child is a frail child, and she spent half of her time at his parents' home, and they were very partial to her and loved her very much. Well, the daddy came to Paul's dad, and she told all of this in front of Paul. Paul's dad came and said to her, if you would give up this Jesus teaching, give up your Jesus and the Jesus teaching, and always reading your Bible, and fulfill the vows you took when you were married to Paul. And if you had done this in the beginning, this wouldn't have happened. Well, you know, that's pretty tough. That'd be tough coming from a stranger, for me. But coming from my father-in-law, or my dad. Who's our fellow Sawyer? What's his first name that lived in the home?
Bill.
Bill lived in the home when I was living in the home when I was there. They'd moved to a new place, and I was in the new place because it was hard for her, having this every time she went into this room. And of course, you bathe your children, you see, every day, and it was just too hard on her. But she told me later that Paul had never cried, he'd never shed a tear, and he feels that there's something wrong with him, he told her. And I said for her to tell him that there isn't anything wrong with him at all. Not at all. He feels this deeply, clear down to his toenails. He's a dear man of God. He's a godly man. He's a man, I can't keep up with him at all. Not at all. And you know, as a sideline, and listen, don't think that they aren't on the victory side, because they are. They really are. But Waldron Scott, bless his heart, decided that they'd have the staff conference there this month, because in Korea, you know, the husband and wife can't both leave now. You can't leave the country at the same time because they're so afraid that you won't come back and you'll leave these orphans for them, for the government, you see. And it makes sense when you're there and see firsthand. And so they, for Sukja's sake, they're having conference there. And she needs it. She needs every one of them, and she needs you tonight, and she needs me. They do. And the very first thing the little girl said to me when she saw me, she's 5 years old, and she said, did you know that my sister's home with Jesus? And I said, yes, you know, I did know that. And she says, and I can't wait to go. But she said she was actually my brother's favorite. You know, she's just all there. She's just the life of the party, the little girl, 5 years old. And then I went back alone to Tokyo. And one of the things we had some glorious, glorious times in Korea. And I wanted to tell you about Korea, and it would take far too long, so I'll give you one highlight, maybe two. After I spoke in the home one evening, then they turned it over for questions, and so we had many hours of questions. And they asked very intimate, very personal questions. They also asked questions on how did you find Jesus as your Savior? Then after you found Jesus Christ as your Savior, then what did you do? And then when you got away from the Lord, then how did you come back? And just very, questions like that. But they asked very intimate questions about Dawson's and my relationship and about our courtship. And they asked me questions that I had long since not thought about. And like one of the questions was, Bob's sitting in this meeting, Bob Boardman, fortunately. And one of the questions was, what was Dawson's greatest weakness? I went just like that, you know, eating too many nuts, I guess. I hadn't thought about it. You remember, Joyce, how he liked nuts? I said, all right, come on, Bob. Get your thinking cap on and let's come up with some answers. So we talked about temper. Can you imagine me talking about Dawson's temper? We mentioned a few things. That he had to constantly work on and work with. And any leader that I know anything about has a temper. But most always it's under, you know, but once in a while Dawson's wasn't. It'd take me all night to tell you about my weaknesses, but fortunately they didn't ask me mine. And I was glad they didn't, because Bob was in the meeting and he lived with us. But we had a grand time. And then they took me to the airport, and I couldn't understand why they wanted to take me to the airport so early, but it wasn't any of my business, so I just decided to just go along the airport. You know, I didn't ask one question. So Paul said, it was getting about lunch, it was after lunchtime, and he said to me, your plane's late, isn't it? And I said, oh, I don't think so. I said, when we checked in, I saw that it was on time. He says, well, then how come you haven't left? Well, I could have left last night if it had been better. I said, you know, he's just funny as a crutch. And he says, no, what time are you supposed to leave? I said, 4 o'clock. He said, 4 o'clock? He said, what time do you think I was going to leave? He said, before lunch. Before lunchtime. He says, let's have lunch. So we had lunch. We had 4 hours of questions. And when they got through gathering, there were 25 people, and most of them men. And they really got down to the nitty-gritty, right down into factual things of that had anything and everything to do with the beginning of our work and the heartaches connected with it and the deprivations. And, you know, a national, if he isn't careful, you see, it looks so tremendous from his viewpoint today that if he, and not only a national, some of you, you know, I'm on an airplane minding my own business, and a lady sits down and she says to me, she asked me a question, and I went, that's her. You don't have children, you know. I can tell you don't have children, you know. I didn't say anything, you know. And so I thought, well, if you give her so much rope, she'll hang herself, and then she'll be all done with it, you know. And she just kept on and on, and so she asked me a question that I had to answer. And I said, oh yes, I have children. She said, you have children? I said, yes, I do. What's so surprising about it? You know, I didn't understand, you know. And she said, because of what I said, that's why I'm so shocked you'd have children. She said, how many do you have? And I said, we had 5. And you're off over here running around, and who's taking care of them? You know, I says, you know, I don't need to share my business with you. You know, I don't need to share a thing with you, dear. So now just relax. They're all married, and they all have children. They're taking care of themselves. I don't really know who's taking care of them, you know. And she says, they're married? I said, oh, yeah. She says, you have grandchildren? I said, yeah. And she says, how many grandchildren do you have? I says, I have 9. How many do you have? She didn't have any. And she sat quiet for a long time, and she said, you know, I think I better ask you to forgive me. I said, for what? You haven't bothered me in the least, you know? And she said, well, you're trying to study, and I know you're Jewish. And so I want to know why you're studying the Bible. Because you're Jewish. And I said, well, this is actually where I found life. It was right here. I had this Bible. She said, found life. You know, we went on like this. And I said, it would be a compliment to be Jewish, but I am not Jewish. You know. And she said, you aren't? I said, no, I'm not. And she said, do you believe that? I said, I certainly do. And I said, do you? And she said, no, I don't. Well, you're going to meet her in glory, by the way. Simply because I just told her about Dawson's death, and she just gasped. She couldn't believe And I told her we had an invalid son that was taken when he was 14. Just killed her. Because she had to eat her words and they weren't sweet. She said they were bitter. And she wasn't gracious at first. But she didn't bother me, you know. She had to get something off her chest, and you don't know what they have under their belt either, you know, so you have to be very careful. But from Japan, Japan's a very long story, but just suffice it to say that I had time with various ones. Lou's home is something else, and her girls. The Yorks, fantastic family, their new baby. Outstanding. They have a child that looks just like Betty, his first wife, and I said so. Thought I'd give Joyce a good old test, you know. And she passed the test 1,000%. She looks exactly like her mother, exactly. And acts like her. The more I was around her, she's just like her mother. And I was in their home, and what a gracious home, and they gave a garden party there where all the gang was invited. And listen, beloved, I don't know whether you think about this or not, but any time I told Lauren, any time you step out of your hotel in Tokyo, you need money and time. And he said, you can say that again. And say it, he said. Everyone lives an hour or so from each other, and they all lived an hour, 15 minutes, an hour and a half from me, from where I lived. And when Scotty wanted to see me one night, it was the second time he wanted to see me, I could tell on the phone that something was wrong. And he was down in my lobby, and when I went downstairs, we went in to have dinner, and he said, doesn't make sense. I said, what doesn't make sense? I get the biggest bang out of him. I said, what doesn't make sense? He says, oh, why do they have to live out so far? I said, why do you have to live out so far? You don't live close. They live out there because they like it. God led them there. So you can like it or not. One thing you better do is count it all joy. He says, no, I'm not going to. I says, tomorrow you may not be able to go out there. You better thank God for your feet and your legs and the energy God gave. This is one of our strong men, chaplain. This is Walden Scott, outstanding man of God. Outstanding. Man of prayer. He can think up more than for you to do than you can possibly write. That man. He's an outstanding man. And loved and beloved, by the way. He really is. He's admired and loved. And he has changed Lou Stevens' night into day. And I'm quoting Lou. And I don't have her permission, but that's what she said. And I'm going to quote it. Because it's to God's honor and glory. But he has helped Lou no end. It's fantastic what this man has done for her life and her ministry. So I took it as from God. Lila, stay so close to the book and go forward on your knees so that when the Holy Spirit wants to use you, you'll be usable. Not when you feel like it, and not just when you want to, but in season and out of season, and to prepare yourself again, Lila, for the unexpected, because it's going to come. And it has. And it will. And from Tokyo, after a glorious, glorious time in Tokyo, I went to Alaska. I've never been to Malaysia, I'd never been to Indonesia, never been to New Zealand or Australia, and I'd never been to Alaska. And I arrived at 12:20 in the morning, and we stood outside, and I read my ticket just like it was daylight, you know. See, it's 12:20 in the morning. And just 3 hours of the 24 hours for the 7 days I was there, it was just like dawn. It was light, but it was, the streetlights were on for 3 to 5 hours only, and most always just 3 hours. It was a different world for me, and Margie Gould's daughter, oldest daughter, met me. She has been there for a few years and manages two beauty parlors. She and her girlfriend. And they brought me down to the Cook's Hotel, and I said, Captain Cook Hotel, and I said, well, I'm staying, forget where I'm staying. Well, anyway, they said, well, your mail and flowers are in this room, in a room here in this hotel. And so we went in, and it was a difference of $5 a night for the two, and it's a chain, and I was registered in both. I don't know how it happened, but that's the way it is. I had nothing to do with it. And so I said, how far out is the other? And they told me, and I said, how do I get to town? And I have to get to town by taxi. And so on Black and White, I stood there and figured it out and thought, well, it would just be a few dollars more for me to stay here in the long run. So I stayed in the Captain Cook Hotel. And it was so of the Lord that I stayed there. And I had seven glorious days in Anchorage in Alaska. And I have a nephew and his wife and a new baby. He was born in January. And I had a grand time with them. And went to them, visited a mission that I've been wanting to for years. And spent about 11 hours with them. And then flew from there to Seattle and stayed for 8 nights with Margie Gould. And I was telling Joyce that I wouldn't even have to pray about moving to Seattle. It's fantastic country. That's where Joyce Enright is from. And I was going to share tonight the navigators that I had dinner with, and I don't think anyone's here that knows them. Because Jim and Marina aren't here, and they know them. I don't think anyone else know them, but there were three sets of them, or four sets, that were converted in our work and taught in our home and on board ship. And one is missionary under the Sudan Interior. And then from there, I came on down. When I left Tokyo, my speaking was over. And I believe it was 57 times that I spoke. And that isn't counting luncheons and dinners and breakfasts and where you answer questions. And I recall I was interviewed in Auckland by a Christian journalist for a Christian paper. And I wasn't interested at all in being interviewed, but this had been set up for me. And so Joe Simmons met with us. And we were long in the interview, and of course he was interested to know about Dawson and about the navigators and all. And so he asked me a question about Billy Graham. And I said, well, you know, I've been here a few days, sir, and your people as a whole do not respect Billy Graham. And so I think that anything I would say wouldn't be accepted. And since I'm not sure how you're going to say this anyway, and I said, you know, Joe, I see he brought a machine, cassette, but he isn't using it, so I'm just not real sure that he's going to quote this like, I'm so glad you're here. And he said, well, I'm glad I'm here too, he said. Well, anyway, this man didn't agree with me about the people and how they felt about Billy. And so I said, well, you would know far better than I, but I'm just, I'm not judging. I'm just stating a fact of already what's been said to me. Well, I went ahead and answered his questions then about Billy and Dawson and the navs. And so when we left, Joe and I had prayer. And I said, I said to Joe first, you know, I'm not real sure about this article. And all I want is God's will for this. I wasn't interested in being interviewed in the first place. And I've never yet been quoted right. And so we had prayer about it. And he said, Lila, just remember. We got through praying. He says, Lila, just remember. I was there. I'm a witness to what was said. And so let's just leave it there. So I was introduced in a bank in Kobe to a neighbor of, who's a Christian, but she's a neighbor, a friend of Hugh Harris's. And I was in the bank doing some business, and Hugh was there with me, and introduced me to her. And she said, oh, I just read an article about you. I said, oh, an article about me, you know. Well, it was in this paper. And so I said, what did he say about Billy? She said, you know, it was just real good. It was an interview about Dawson and Billy and the navigators. And she said, it was very clear. And beautifully said, and so I just thank the Lord. And I bring this out to show you that it was the little things along the way that God answered. He protected me. He cared for me. I was never lonely. I wouldn't know what how to spell the word. It was very, very thrilling to be a representative of the King of Kings and the Navigators and Lorne. And Lorne said to me in parting, among other things, he said, "Lila, I will back you in everything you say and do, and should you make a mistake, I'll even back you in that." And I have since thanked him face to face for backing me in the mistakes, because I made a mistake. And our mistakes, I don't know, but I do know of one that I did make. And I quoted this, read this verse to you a while ago on correction for a reason, because I was corrected on this trip, and I was corrected by a man who walks with God and who talks to God. And when you and I get to the place where we can't learn and we aren't flexible and we give the impression that we've arrived or that we know it all, well, we're in for a shock and a tremendous letdown. And so, thank you for praying, you who did, that God would keep me from evil and from the evil one. I ask you to pray that. I'd like to, in closing, read this. I'll remind you of what my prayer and my promise was 1 Chronicles 4:10, and I gave it to you the night I was here last. And Lila called on the God of Israel, saying, "Oh, that thou wouldest bless me indeed, and enlarge my coast, and that thine hand might be with me, and that thou would keep me from evil, that it may not grieve me." And God granted her that which she requested. And I want to praise him tonight and to thank you again for faithfully. And please know that I've just touched on the surface. It's far deeper than this. We have a wonderful gang, though, Brad. Sold out.
Well, Lila, thank you very much. We appreciate that tremendous report. And there were many points I feel that the Lord spoke to hearts, many moments when you could have heard a pin drop. And we appreciate you sharing your heart with us. Let me lead us in a word of prayer. Our Father, we do praise you tonight for answered prayer. We praise you for the marvelous way in which you went before Lila on this trip, for the wonderful way in which you ministered through her life to so many, our staff, our friends and contacts, the people that we are working with, and the people, so many of them, who we feel will one day be Navigator representatives and staff members. And we thank you for all of them. May the Spirit of God hearts continuously about the thoughts.